Welcome to this edition of the Fortean Freakout podcast, the niche in the electric internet where we explore the strange and the supernatural and the magical and the mysterious. I'm your host, author Jeff Holder, and today we're visiting one of the most celebrated paranormal sites on the planet, Loch Ness. But this is no ordinary tale of creature sightings, oh no. This is the story of the day someone subjected the Loch Ness Monster to an exorcism. By the 1970s, several researchers had come to the conclusion that the elusive creature that supposedly lived in Loch Ness behaved not like a creature of nature, but of supernature. It could not be caught because it was not flesh and blood. Some saw Nessie simply as an elusive spirit, straying in occasionally from some alternative dimension, leaving inconclusive sightings and chaos in its wake. Others, most notably the author F.W. Ted Holliday, went further and regarded Nessie as something that was outright malevolent, a veritable supernatural manifestation of evil. This view came to be shared by the Reverend Dr. Donald Ormond, one of the foremost exorcists in the Church of England, who had an international reputation for exorcising circus big tops and wild animal cages. In his book Experiences of a Present-Day Exorcist, he wrote, "What has been seen, and is still visible to some on occasion, is not a concrete present-day monster, but a projection into our day and age of something which had its habitat in Loch Ness and its surroundings millions of years ago." In the Reverend Ormond's opinion, the Loch Ness Monster was a spectre or ghost, a psychical projection of a dinosaur from the prehistoric past into our modern age. Dr. Ormond received confirmation of his ideas at a meeting of the Swedish Organisation of Inquiry into Psychical Disorder. One of the presentations was on the terrible mental effects on those who saw the monster of Loch Storsjön in Sweden. Lake monsters, it seemed, were demonic, and so they needed exorcising. And thus was born one of the strangest episodes in the history of Loch Ness, which, considering the hullabaloo that greets the slimmest of monster sightings, is saying something. Along with fellow exorcist Reverend Dom Robert Petitpierre, a monk of the Anglican Order of St. Benedict, Reverend Ormond drew up a plan based on a cross simply drawn over a map of the loch. On the 2nd of June 1973, accompanied by Ted Holliday, Dr. Ormond and Reverend Petitpierre travelled to each of the four points where the cross touched the land. Loch End, at the north tip of Loch Ness, was the site of the first ritual. The participants knelt and received the sign of the cross made in holy water on their foreheads. Before Ormond read out the first part of the exorcism, which included the lines, "Grant that by the power entrusted to thy unworthy servant, this highland loch and the land adjoining it may be delivered from all evil spirits, all vain imaginations, projections and phantasms, and all deceits of the evil one. O Lord, subject them to thy servant's commands that, at his bidding, they will harm neither man nor beast, but depart to the place appointed them, there to remain forever." The group then visited a spot between Inverfarageig and Dorris on the east shore, followed by Fort Augustus to the south, near Urquhart Castle on the western shore. The same ritual was conducted at each location. Towards the end of the day, the group rowed out in a small boat to the middle of the loch where, over the centre of the imaginary Great Cross, Ormond performed the final exorcism, which included the lines, "I adjure thee, thou ancient serpent, by the judge of the quick and the dead, by him who made thee and the world, that thou cloak thyself no more in manifestations of prehistoric demons, which henceforth shall bring no sorrow to the children of men." After the ceremony, Reverend Ormond almost collapsed, something he had come to expect with every exorcism. The exorcism is described by Ted Holliday in his book The Goblin Universe, and in an article that he wrote for the magazine Flying Saucer Review. During the drive around Loch Ness and the various rituals, Holiday became increasingly aware of a tension building up, which appeared to affect all the participants with the exception of Ormond. Holiday wrote, "Personally, I expected the appearance of the monster, or, much worse, something coming up under the boat." As it happened, neither Nessie nor demon surfaced, but in the following days, Holiday experienced a bizarre set of paranormal phenomena, including inexplicable weather events, and a circle of light appearing on his forehead where the holy water had been applied during the protective rite before the exorcism. To Reverend Ormond, these curious episodes were some kind of psychic aftermath of the exorcism. Did the exorcism of the Loch Ness Monster actually work? Well, sightings continue to be reported, and however unreliable many of them may be, can hardly be said that monster fever has abated. In fact, if anything, it's the opposite. No one has attempted a similar ritual since, and in many ways the episode can be seen as a curiosity of its time, an example of the peculiar enthusiasms of the 1970s. Still, I find myself drawn to the image of a frail, white-haired old man standing upright on a tiny boat in the middle of a huge body of fresh water and bringing down the judgment of God on a probably entirely mythical monster. Can it get any stranger? If you want to find out more about the exorcism of the Loch Ness Monster, the complete story is in my book The Guide to Mysterious Loch Ness and the Inverness Area, published by the History Press in 2008. Details can be found at my website, www.jeffholder.com. Until next time then, allez avec les dieux!